I'm happier when I'm in motion, when I'm striving for something, when I'm doing something, when I'm trying to achieve a goal. You know, I think at the end of the day, it's like living a life just like being relaxed and not striving for anything and not trying to improve myself does not make a lot of the hard times worth it.
How do you create an unshakable business? I crossed $100 million in net worth by the age of 28. Now I'm growing acquisition.com into a $1 billion portfolio. In this podcast, I share the lessons I've learned in scaling big businesses and helping our portfolio companies do the same. Buckle up and let's build.
And that brings me on to like a lot of, obviously you're in the business world. And I think there's a quote that you said about, it's not about the money. The money just allows me to impact more people. Is that where this comes from then?
I think it does come a lot from him. I think that I grew up with my father telling me, you know, nothing is worth doing things you don't enjoy. No amount of money. And, you know, part of me believed him, part of me didn't. Part of me was like, I'll find out for myself. But no, I didn't actually, in the sense of everything I pursued up until I met Alex was only to learn and to figure out what I really wanted to do and how I could help people. And it wasn't until I met Alex that I feel like it's almost like the bridging of him and my father, having both of their perspectives has given me mine, which was my dad always said, follow your passion, do what you love, do what you can to help other people. And I would do that at the sacrifice of myself. And so I think that was where that went wrong, was that I wasn't taking care of myself. I wasn't, you know, giving myself the oxygen mask first. And then I met Alex and he said, why on earth can you not have both? Why can't you do things you love and have passion over and also make money? And that was such, it sounds so simple, but it was such a frame shift for me. And I was like, I don't know, I guess I can. He's like, yeah, I don't think it's an either or. And I don't think he knows how much that impacted me. It was like our second date that we had because I was telling him everything I was doing at the time. And I think my goal since then has been like, how can everything be a win-win? How can the business that I create be a win for me in making money, me in impacting other people, my employees in the job that they have that they get to enjoy, and the partners that we work with in the relationship that we provide, and the community that we affect? And I think that that's been what my frame shift has been, is just if you don't know how it can, how a situation or a business can give you all of the things, then you're not thinking creatively enough. You haven't beat the idea up enough. Because if you beat it up enough, you will think of a business that can make a lot of money, impact a lot of people, inspire a lot of change, and help all these other people too. And I think that that's what I have realized, is just I wasn't creative enough at the time. I didn't know what my options were. I didn't even know some of the things that existed. And so my frame of reference was very small. Now my frame of reference is much bigger. And I do believe completely, because I think I'm living it, that you can do all of it.
Yeah. And I think it is a resource as well. Money as a resource is powerful. Like it is, there's no denying that you do need it to have, you don't need it, but it's a massive ingredient, I think, to be able to impact more people. I don't want to keep diving into deep stories. You've been so gracious with sharing, but I'm interested to hear maybe something you haven't shared with anyone before, like a story that would sort of encapsulate who Alex was and that would describe him to somebody else through something that he's done or some sort of action that he's done for you.
I can give you two different stories to show you the two sides. I think the first story, on our second date, Alex said, can you come over and I'll barbecue? And, you know, we'll make some steaks, we'll do whatever, all this stuff. And so I said, sure. So I came to his house and I said, you know, where's the steak? He's like, oh, we'll go get them together. It's like, okay, amazing. We go to the grocery store. He's like, you go get all of these things and I'll grab this thing, whatever it was. And we split up and then we grab the food and then we go back. We get back to his place. And I say, okay, sir, are you cooking the steaks? And he's like, oh no, I don't know how. And I said, what? He's like, well, you know, I meant like come over. But he's like, but do you know how to cook steaks? And I was like, well, do you know how to cook potatoes? He's like, no. I was like, do you have a barbecue? He's like, no. And I was like, oh my God. So then I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, wait, okay, there's barbecues outside at the pool of the place you live. And he's like, oh yeah, great, amazing, let's do that then. And it turned from, he invited me over to cook me this dinner to, we go to the grocery store, we get them, and then I cook the dinner, right? And I thought it was so funny because as much as some people might think like ridiculous, it was like my first lesson in learning, because the whole time I'm cooking anything, preparing, he's like, oh, you're really good at this. You're really great at this. Good job. You're doing amazing. And Alex has this way of, when he doesn't want to do something, encouraging somebody else to get the thing done, which I don't think I really nailed down until a few years into our relationship. At the same time, you know, I think that's the Alex that a lot of people see, especially on social media. You know, that's probably the dynamic. We kind of play around like that. I think Alex will do anything to ensure that I feel good. And what I mean by that is, it's not always what's easy, but he will do what makes the most sense. So in the beginning, when we started Gym Launch, it was like we were doing everything together. And we met with somebody who said, Layla, we wrote all the functions of the business on a whiteboard. And then they said, they circled marketing and they said, this is Alex. And then they had all these other functions and they said, this is Layla. I've never done any of them before. You know, the only thing I actually knew how to do at that point was sell. And I was like, and they were like, and you don't help her. And in that moment, I was like, he doesn't help me. I have so much more. And it was so funny because what that guy told us and what Alex really respected was, he said, Alex, Layla is just as able as you to do these things in business. If you ever try to help her too much, then she won't believe in herself and you're going to rob her of that. And he really, in the hardest times when I might be complaining, when I might be saying, I don't know how to do this, I can't figure this out, Alex was like, all he ever did was encourage me. He was like, yes, you can. You can figure this out. You don't need me. And I think that if people see him and they hear how often that man tells me that on a weekly basis, you don't need me. You can do this. It is the most empowering thing that I could ask for, because I think I see so many men want to be needed by the woman, and therefore they cripple her of her ability to do it on her own. And he has done the complete opposite, which is all he's ever done is speak life into me and tell me why I'm so good. I don't need him. You're better than me. One day I won't even be making content because you'll be making it. Like, who does that? But he does. And I don't know if without his constant encouragement, if I could even show up the way I do today, because I think he, in so many ways, helped me go from a much more insecure, very, very hardworking, very sincere, very humble, but very insecure girl when I met him, to a very confident woman. Because he, in those moments when I feel like I can't keep going, feel like I can't do something, I can't figure it out, all he does is sell me on myself and why I can. He doesn't come in and try to save the day. And it's the biggest gift that he could ever give me, because he could save the day. You know, Alex is complete, I would say, like, he's got a lot of firepower and a lot of horsepower. And especially in the beginning, he had had 4.5, 5 more years in business than me. So he also had more experience. But he still let me figure it out on my own. And I think that's why things are able to work between us, because that's all I've ever wanted, is somebody who can make me better, you know, and not use my moments of weakness as an advantage for themselves. And he's truly done that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people look to you guys as like this amazing couple who manage to support each other in both ways. There's a time, I think you spoke about this, where maybe a function, and you realized that people were speaking to Alex more, and that you felt that you were maybe in the corner a little bit. But there was a lot of people would say, oh, he's this alpha male type who's sort of overbearing in the conversation. But you didn't take it like that. You took it in a completely different way.
There's been a lot of instances where I've been surrounded by people who have told me why, in the beginning of our relationship, why maybe it was going to be very hard for me to achieve my goals being with Alex. And they always said, he's too loud. He's too overbearing. He's too big of a character. You're never going to be able to become the person that you want to become being with him. He's going to stifle you. He's going to suppress you. And it felt very, one, I felt very violated for people to be speaking that upon me about my relationship when I didn't ask for it. But the second was, when I looked at them and the fact that they were saying that, I thought to myself, what a victim mindset. You know, here's this very powerful, very smart, very, very hardworking man who's doing his damn best and he's shining. Do you think I should tell him to be quiet, to shine less, so that I can feel better? And I remember there was this moment, it was like a couple of years into our relationship when it was like suddenly I realized that in the moments when people were listening to Alex, in the moments when people were saying, oh, this must be tough since, you know, he's getting all the credit for these things, those were all opportunities for me to look at him and say, what is he doing that I am not doing? That if I did, I would get the same, right? And it's often the way he presents himself, the way he speaks on things, the amount that he might prepare for things. And I think that that is lost on a lot of people when they see somebody who has so much power. They just think, I want them to have less so that I can feel like I have more. And I have found no growth in that. I have only found growth in saying, how lucky am I that I'm married to somebody like that who I can first see, learn from. And I've learned more from him than anybody else in my entire life. And I think we've been able to do that for each other, which is, I know that there's a lot of ways in which being married to each other benefits each of us. And I think it takes time to figure out what that is. But for me, that's been what it is that I have always erred towards the side of insecure and quiet. And marrying Alex, I've been able to find my voice and be much louder. And I think that's helped me in a lot of ways, especially in leadership. And I'm grateful for that. You know, there's never a moment now that I've ever thought to myself like, oh, I wish that these things wouldn't happen, because all it tells me is I still have room to go. You know, there's still room for me to go. I have a lot of room to develop in these areas, and it's just a journey.
I love that. I need to, just to fill in the story, could you take us from the gap between doing the sales for the personal training and the gym? Yeah. All the way up until now, I guess, like, maybe not to now, but through acquisition.com and gym launch and all that kind of stuff, like a snippet story so I can like dice between it.
So after I, you know, I started doing personal training, because after I lost the weight and I stopped drinking, I said, I need to go be around people who are wanting more. And I felt like growing up in Portage, like it's not a bad town or anything, but if I want to make it as easy as possible for me to achieve my goals, is this the place I should be? And the answer is no. I would go somewhere like California if I wanted to achieve my goals. And so that's what I did. I packed up, I had a Prius. I packed up my Prius and I went on Craigslist, found a place, rented the place and drove there. I want to say it's the day after I graduated college. I think it was the day after my last class because I didn't even walk my graduation. I was like, I'm out of here. Drove to California. When I got there, I said, I'm just going to find a job within walking distance. So I literally walked to every gym within walking reasonable, like 35, 40 minutes. And I applied at all of them. And I said, I will work at one of these. And at that point, I didn't know what I wanted to do. But all I knew was I want to have some kind of business in fitness. I don't know what it is. I also know that I don't have the skills right now to start a business. So I'm going to go acquire those skills by working at different jobs. And I said, I'll start as a personal trainer. Maybe I'll work my way up, eventually be a manager, marketing, whatever. And so start as a personal trainer at 24 Hour Fitness. Then once I'd been there for a little over a year, I said, this is not for me because it's literally all sales. And then when you're not selling, you're training the clients you've sold. I took many of those clients and went to a small boutique gym. And the reason I went there is that I wanted to learn from the owner, because I'd heard a few things that, one, he was very, very good at sales and marketing. Two, he was a very good leader. I was like, oh, well, here I've been able to learn sales, but I haven't been able to learn marketing or leadership. Not really. In fact, they even offered me a management position at 24 Hour Fitness. And I said, no way. I don't want to do that. The thought of managing people at that time in my life was like, ugh, which is crazy to think now. So ended up going to this boutique gym. And then when I was there, I started at the same time that I was at that boutique gym, training clients online. Facebook ads, Instagram ads were starting to work for fitness. You started seeing people pop up that were doing online training. And so I started taking on some online clients using like Instagram. I was at this place where I had discussion with the guy who owned the gym about like, would I ascend into manager? Would I be running the gym? What would it look like? And part of me was thinking like, maybe I should just start my own. And on the other side, I actually was approached by somebody online who said, let's go 50-50 and do an online business. And this person already had a successful one on her own. And so I was at this point where I felt like, what path do I want to take? And I wasn't sure which one would get me to my goal faster. And then I met Alex on Bumble. And on our first date, I told him about this kerfluckle, whatever you want to call it, this decision that I had to make. And he was like, oh, you should do neither of those things. I was like, well, what would I do instead? He was like, you should work for me. And I was like, what? I was like, okay, this is weird. We're on a date. Like, why are you telling me I should work for you? And he said, because you'll learn more skills and you'll make more money than either of those options. And I remember being like, why is this guy doing this right now? Like, we barely know. I've said like three words. You're talking the whole time. You know, like, I'm like, what's going on? And it's funny because, you know, we ended up going on dates every day. We hung out every day for 3 weeks. And I told him to stop asking me for the first couple weeks. I said, this is just weird. Like, I just want to date. Like, let's just whatever. And about 3 weeks in, Alex said, I have this idea for this company called Gym Launch. Do you want to do it with me? I was like, no, I'm doing my own stuff right now. And I still don't know you very well. He said, okay, well, I'm going to go prove concept for this business. So I'm going to fly out to this guy's gym and I'm going to be gone for like a couple weeks. And I was like, okay. And he was like, can you like watch my gyms in house? And I was like, okay. And so I remember I stayed at his house at that time. And I went to his gyms and would like pick up the cash and deposit in the bank. And like, I just did stuff for him while he was gone. I remember thinking like, I don't even know why you trust me to like take out all the money. This is odd. We've only known each other 3 weeks. But he said, he was like, I know that you wouldn't steal. And I was like, well, I wouldn't. So you're not wrong. And he left. He was gone for 3 weeks. He was basically trying out this concept of Gym Launch, where we would sell people into these gyms. And we would do the marketing. We would do the sales. So it's like we would market for a gym, fly out to the gym, sit there at their front desk, do all the sales for the members, and then they would have the members to keep. And we would give the owner a percentage of the sales, but we would take most of it. So he did that for 3 weeks. And he would call me every night. And he'd be like, I remember it was FaceTime, but it would be pitch black because he was like in the dark, just so tired because he'd been there from 6 a.m. to usually like 8:30 or 9 p.m. And then you just do it again, right? And he would just be like, I went 6 for 6 today. I went 10 for 10 today. Like every day it was like a sales update almost. And then we talk about like, well, what could you do to get more people in? We kind of like ping pong on like how you could get a better show rate of people, how you could close more people, like all these different things about the pitch and the script and all that. And it was kind of fun. And then I remember he was like, I'm coming back. Can you pick me up from the airport? So I picked him up from the airport and we went back to his house and he pulled out a stack of contracts and it was like this thick. And I was like, what's this? He's like, these are all the contracts from all the people I signed up for all the gyms. And I was like, you haven't put them in the system? What is this, like 1990? He's like, oh no, usually somebody else does that. And I was like, oh God. He's like, if you can help me, then we can go on a date after. And I was like, oh. So I remember we sat down. He like poured me a drink, which I still at this point hadn't drank much before meeting him. So it was still a lot for me. And we started processing contracts. He taught me how to use the CRM system. And at the end of it, we looked at like the grand total. It was something like $120,000. And in that moment, I was like, this works. He was like, yeah. And I remember my second question, I was like, is it legal? And he was like, yes. And I was like, I don't know. It feels illegal for some reason. And I said, you know what? I'll do it. And I think my mentality at that point in time was like, what do I have to lose? I'm 23. And worst case scenario, I pick up back where I'm at right now, which is like, I go back to a gym. I pick up, I tell my old clients I'm coming back. And I just do that. And then I go into one of the businesses I was thinking about. But this sounded like too much of an adventure to say no to. And so I had a week gap between me quitting the gym I was at and telling all my clients I was leaving them. And then I flew out 5 days later to Baltimore, Maryland to launch the first gym with Alex. And that was the start of what has now become Gym Launch.
Was there anything in the proof of concept, you think, to get you on board, like from Alex's half, like to prove to you and put those contracts in front of you and say, to get you on board on the team?
What I knew was this, which is that the entire way that I had been acquiring clients was old phone lists from gyms, going to like Whole Foods, approaching people that are on ellipticals at big box gyms, like complete like cold outbound. And it was very hard and took a long time to do. And when Alex showed me that he could generate business for gyms using Facebook and then a list just appeared of leads, I was like, holy crap, it takes me weeks to get 20 leads. You can get them in a day with like, it's like 50 cents a lead. And that was the biggest thing that I knew there was something to it, because I had witnessed how hard it was for all the gyms I'd gone to, all the gym owners I knew, all the ones I'd worked at, to get leads. So the fact that he could do it that easily, that was the one piece that told me, like, we've got something here that nobody else has. And so it made sense to me. I was like, if we can actually pull this off and figure out a way that this business can work, this can really have legs, because nobody's doing this right now. And what it was that gyms had not learned how to use digital advertising yet. Gyms were still doing the old methods. It was right when social media was becoming a method for, now some industries get on it earlier, but gyms, brick and mortar gym owners, they are not typically very tech savvy. They're not first forward with social media. And so it wasn't something that they had gotten into. And so it wasn't until, I think honestly, Gym Launch, that the industry completely changed.
I used to own a small women's gym, and we used to do leaflets, like thousands of leaflets. And then one day we was like, let's just run Facebook ads and like specific demographics. And it was like changed everything overnight. It was unbelievable. Oh, yeah. I'm super curious. Those 3 weeks when you met Alex, you must have been like, what the f*** is this guy?
You know, when I first met him, I remember our first date. We met for Froyo. He wasn't overly enthusiastic. Like, he barely even smiled at first, which, come to find out, is because I have a giant back tat, and he saw it and was like, judging. And we had Froyo, and then I realized very quickly he was just hungry because he started smiling. And then the rest of the date was talking about business for like 4 hours, and not like any other date I'd been on, but the most fun one that I had been on, because that was all I had been thinking about. Like, for the prior year and a half, I was just like heads down focused. Like, all I want to do is focus on my career and everything else will follow. I couldn't even, at that point, I remember thinking, I'm not planning to get married until I'm like 28 or 29, 30. At this point, I'm 22, 23. I'm not looking for my next husband. You know what I mean? And so when I met him, I just remember thinking, man, even if it doesn't work out with us, I would love to just be friends with this guy because he's so interesting. And I feel like when I was talking to him, it felt like we were on the same, I don't want to say like wavelength, but like we saw reality the same way. And I didn't feel that way with anybody else I'd gone on dates with. I felt like, especially probably given the area I was in, it felt like they wanted me to be a more watered down version of myself. And Alex didn't give me that impression at all. He gave me the opposite, which was like, you know, from the beginning, I think the second day, you know, questioning what I wanted to do and saying, why couldn't you do more than that? Why don't you have bigger vision for where you want to go? And I think he really, in the beginning, changed a lot of my perspective about myself very quickly and made me realize that there's a lot of bigger opportunities that I could pursue. And I think I realized I needed to be around people like that more. You know, I think that he just thinks really big and he always has. And at that point in my life, I think I was pretty insecure. And so it's almost like I might be thinking it, but I didn't want to say it because I felt embarrassed. Like, I have no evidence to support that these big dreams could be reality. He didn't care. He would say it anyways. And I think that was really compelling to me because it felt like we complemented each other very well.
Hey guys, a quick break to tell you that if you'd like to see more content from me that isn't just listening to my voice, you can go on and check out my YouTube channel as well. Just search Layla Hormozi and you'll see me in my face. Thanks again for listening and let's get back to the show.
There's something you said before about small businesses, and sometimes you think it's more difficult to run a small business than it is a big business. Was obviously you had that encouragement from Alex where it was like to think big. Do you think there is truth in that? In that, you know, people could dream a lot bigger than they are and achieve those things as well.
I think it is just as hard to start a small business as a big business, as it is a big business, because there are advantages and disadvantages on both sides. And I think that, for example, the biggest thing for me is, you know, when we decide to build acquisition.com, the main thing I was thinking is I need to be able to build a vision so big that everybody else's visions for themselves can fit inside of it. And that's how you can really get people to get on board with your vision. I think a lot of people start off with a vision and it's very hard to get people to work for them because their vision is just enough for them. There's no room for expansion, and there's no room for expansion barely beyond their vision, but not even for the people within the organization. And so it's really hard to get people on a bandwagon when your vision is so limiting. And so for me, like, acquisition.com has been so much easier than Gym Launch. And mind you, when we very first started acquisition.com, there wasn't some big brand. But because the vision is so much bigger that we can recruit people and into the vision and into the company, that their visions can fit within ours. And the limiter that it felt like we had at Gym Launch was we had a vision for the industry. But at the same time, it was limited by gyms. You know, that was our clientele. And so beyond gyms, we couldn't go into like a greater vision. And so it felt at times very limiting because, you know, people would pursue opportunities where they could see more runway for themselves within the organization compared to ours. Rightfully so.
When you talk about company size, like let's take Gym Launch, for example, the moment of sale, like what was that moment like? And I mean, for some people, those numbers are mind blowing, but I'm just curious as to what that meant to you and Alex at the time.
I think selling a business, more of the emotional up and down comes before. The moment itself was very unfulfilling. It was just me and Alex sitting alone in a hotel room when it happened. Because you don't know when it's going to happen. You can target a date, but you might be anywhere when it happens. And we just happened to be on the last day of a vacation in Mexico, because we had actually planned the vacation to be after the sale, but the sale went too long. And so we were there through the last few weeks of the sale, which was very stressful. So I think all the times leading up to it, in all the micro decisions, signing contracts, making decisions, telling different people on our team it was going to happen, those were harder for me than the actual moment. And I think in the moment, I was like, we did it. You know, we did what we said we were going to do, like prove a point that we could sell this, we could build a sellable company and show other people it's possible. And I felt excited because I knew what we were going to do next, which was acquisition.com. But at the same time, and I think this was probably more how Alex felt in the moment, I'm not going to speak for him, but I'm just guessing, I just remember he didn't talk for like 3 hours. You know, we went to breakfast and we just didn't speak. He was just quiet. And I was like, what's wrong? I'm like hoping he's not like, I regret that, you know? He's like, I don't know. And I think somewhat of the feeling was that what a lot of people don't know is that about 19 months prior to that, we met with some of the biggest PE firms that existed. And we had the company valued. And they said that right now you could sell the company for $150 million. But if you just wait a year and you add in this technology that you're building right now, you could sell it for $350, $500 million. So to sell the business for $50 million, when your expectation and that you know you could have sold it 19 months earlier for 150, but then COVID hit. So when they told us to wait and to build this thing, and we listened, and I remember thinking, all my friends have said, you can always sell, you can never sell too early, but you can sell too late. But it felt still pretty early. So I was like, ah, it feels too early, you know? I don't think a lot of people understand that it was disheartening because we were going through the process of prepping the company to sell, and then COVID hit. And the company took a huge haircut, you know, like cut our EBITDA in half. Not to mention now you're in an industry that nobody wants to buy anything in. But we had already gotten so excited about starting acquisition.com that we were like, I don't want to keep doing this. But it also feels like, holy crap, are we going to leave that much money on the table? But then there's the other thought. Well, what's going to happen? Is it really going to go back to where it was? And so I think there was a lot of conflict throughout the entire process because I felt very, like a sense of, I definitely felt angry at times because I felt like, God, I'm ignorant. And that's why we didn't sell earlier. And if I had known, like there's so many outside forces waiting to kill your business. You know, COVID was one that obviously affected us greatly. And, you know, obviously I'm like, dang, would have been cooler to sell it for 150 million. And obviously the business is worth a lot more today than we sold it for. So I think that's why, like when the sale was done, it felt relieving because we had for so long had this vision of acquisition.com that we wanted to pursue and we weren't able to because we were like, well, if the company doesn't sell, what if we have two businesses? That's not acceptable. So it felt relieving. At the same time, I think we both thought many times until, like many times in the beginning, we're like, was that the right move? You know, like, was that the right decision to make? And it was because it gave us a lot of the skills and the knowledge that we have now that allows us to do a lot of things in acquisition.com. But at the same time, if I went back with the skills I have now, I would have never sold the company.
I'm going to take it back into sort of a, I can see why it was frustrating, you know, massively. But also just talking from the young woman who was selling at Planet Fitness, when was there a part of her looking at 50 million hitting an account and going, what the f***, like, was there any of that? Did you think about just going, you know what, we can just be out here. Like we could, you know, we can just chill. We've got money for the rest of our lives if we want to.
Yeah. It sounds very depressing. Like if we were to sell the business and then just put it into real estate or into the S&P or like, you know, treasuries or whatever, we could have gotten great returns on that. And that is definitely a possibility. But then what do we do? You know, like really, what do I do until I die?
But most people are like, oh, go to the restaurant, go on holidays. You know, yeah, what is that?
You know, during the sale process, we had very little ability to do anything in the business because we had put, you know, CEO in place. And at the same time, we couldn't build something new. So we did a lot of traveling, seeing friends, eating out, and it was nice at times, but it didn't feel satisfying. And I think there's like a false sense of comfort found in living a life of luxury and comfort. And I just don't want that for myself. I think I'm really grateful that we had that time before the sale to kind of do that on a micro scale, because I see a lot of people who sell their company and they get really weird, you know? Like they stop whatever they had that built that company, it leaves them. And I think one, it didn't feel like a big enough win for that to leave me. I know that sounds crazy. But two, I'm happier when I'm in motion, when I'm striving for something, when I'm doing something, when I'm trying to achieve a goal. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's like, living a life just like being relaxed and not striving for anything and not trying to improve myself does not make a lot of the hard times worth it. And I think building something really epic and cool that can make the world better does.
So this one I'm asking for advice for maybe quite a few of our viewers, especially have businesses, they're entrepreneurs and all that kind of stuff, but also personally as well. If you were to take a business from a small business, you know, and I'm guessing the ones you acquire, like, well, first of all, let me just hit, like, at a business that you acquire on a smaller scale, what does that look like?
Smaller side, I would say, you know, they're maybe 5-6 million in revenue.
So how would you take something like that to, like, what is your intention to take something like a $5 or $6 million business to, I don't know where it would be?
It really depends on the industry. So every industry, there are different size, you know, there are either smaller or bigger businesses in different industries because of market caps. And so if the business is in, let's think of an example one. So say we have, I'm going to give you a few examples of businesses. We have one business that we start off with, and it is a book publishing business. And we look at that business and we say, it's a good business, there's good returns. But what could we do to make this a more exciting business, or even, you know, increase the market cap? Well, we could turn it into a technology business. So we could take the way that we teach people to publish books and we could build it into technology. That makes for a more sellable business, a more scalable business, and it creates a business that has a much larger TAM than just a publishing business. And so that's an example of one that we've done with one of the companies in the portfolio. You know, another business that we, from the beginning, they were called Enchanted Fairies, and we met them, and they had a photography studio, and then they were teaching people how to start photography studios to have them like theirs. But their photography studio was so wildly successful, we said, why wouldn't you just open up a bunch of photography studios? And they were like, well, how do you do that? You know, because then you have to grow a big organization. But higher enterprise value, more sellable, more impactful, right? And so that business has now turned into a chain of almost 40 photography studios where we do children's photography. And so I think a lot of looking at business is trying to figure out, like, given the resources of the entrepreneur and the opportunity, first off, you have to ask yourself, is this the best vehicle to be in, given the resources and the opportunity? And so the first thing we do is determine, like, do we need to change vehicles? You know, book publishing versus technology, you know, selling people on how to do photography versus opening up a large scale chain. That's the first thing that you have to look at. And I think a lot of people that we meet with, they don't have the perspective to even know what vehicles are available to them. And so we tell them what there is. We say, these are the things that exist. You know, do you think one of these would be more suitable for your skill set and the goals you have? Because a lot of people that come to us, they want to build a huge, durable business that they can one day sell for hundreds of millions of dollars. I'm like, well, it's either going to be easy in the beginning and harder later on, or it is harder in the beginning and easier later on. And that's what it tends to be, is that people pick the vehicle that is easiest to start in the beginning. Seldom is that the vehicle that gets you to that crazy good sale. You know, it wasn't for Gym Launch. We had to completely change the business to get it to a place where, you know, it was valued at 150 million. And seldom is it for most businesses. So I think you have to ask yourself, like, where do you want the hard, in the beginning or at the end? And a lot of people say, I'd like it easier in the beginning. So they pick a vehicle that makes it easy. But we come in, and usually what we do from the get-go is determine, like, do we need a different vehicle? Because if the goal is sell for 200 million, sell for 300 million, this is going to be very hard to get there. It'll be easy until we get to 10 million or 20 million or 30 million, and then it's going to be really hard. And I think that is a lot of what it is determining that piece combined with, do we have the people that can execute on that vehicle? Do we have the people that can drive it all the way to 200 million? Do we have the structure and do we have the skill? And that's why not just looking at businesses, but looking at the founders that run those businesses is so incredibly important, because oftentimes one of the biggest reasons people can't build their business to the height that they would like to is simply because of who they are. They are not of good enough, great enough character or skill that they cannot attract anybody with greater character or skill. So it's like when I think of how do I attract better talent, I think of how do I become better talent. And a lot of people don't see that. I see it because I could tell you, we recruit for leadership in all of our portfolio companies. The ones where the founders have the least skill and experience and character are the hardest to get people to work for them. And therefore, it's very hard to build the business because you don't get the best people. And if you don't have the best people, it's much harder to make anything come to life.
One of the things I would have loved to cover, because I know you've had to deal with a lot of conflict online and you've been super open and honest about so many aspects of your life that I think has combated that fantastically. But when it does come through, the conflict, or as a lot of people would call it, hate, how have you dealt with that? And has it been impactful on your life?
Yeah, I think it was very hard for me in the beginning to deal with negativity online because I think it never comes in the ways that you expect it. Like you expect people will say one thing about you, but then it's almost like whatever blind spots you have about yourself that maybe you didn't notice or you didn't think were bad or didn't think were weird, people expose you to them in the comments, right? And so then you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't think that was weird. Number one thing for me, my voice. Everyone always is tearing apart. Are you a smoker? Are you a tranny? Are you a, what's the third one? Smoker, tranny, or on steroids? And I'm like, how could anyone ever think that? And for the first, I want to say, year that I made content, it was hard for me. I was like, you know, first I took the, like, I'm going to read all the comments every time and just like take it to the gut, you know, and I'm going to get stronger if I read them. And, you know, that sometimes was really tough when like, you know, a TikTok video would hit off and there would be like 1,000 comments saying like, are you on steroids? Are you a tranny? Are you a smoker? And I was like, wow, like nobody even listens to the content. And it wasn't until I had a conversation with Alex where I said, like, I hate that this bothers me. It doesn't change what I'm doing. I continue to make the content. I'm continuing to do everything I'm doing, but I am bothered by this. And he said, well, does part of you think it's true? And I was like, is what true? He's like, do you think your voice is weird? And I was like, well, it is kind of weird. Like it's deep, it's always been deep and raspy. And he's like, so then why do you blame them for thinking this? And I was like, I don't. And it was like, in that moment, I was like, I agree with you. It does sound that way. I do sound like I'm on steroids or a tranny or a smoker. And you know what? That's my voice. And it is what it is. And I think it's funny because I remember that moment. And from that point on, I see the comments and I don't, it so seldom ever bugs me ever anymore. It's like, I agree. I have a weird voice. Own it. Just own your shit. And anytime I see anyone say anything about just anything negative in the comments, of course people at times are going to think, you know, because I'm married to Alex, maybe it's like, oh, she's just riding his coattails, or, you know, I got my nose done and they're like, oh, she's very insecure about all her looks. Like, of course the things that I'm putting out there would make people think that. I don't blame them for thinking those things. Can I understand why people comment those things? No, but I'm also glad I don't have their life, and it is what it is. So I think for me, a lot of the times that I see people really struggling with the hate they get online, it's because in some way they agree with it. And it is true. My voice is deep and weird.
Okay, so this is, I'd love to like, we'll round it off on this. I have one more question after this, but this is the theme, I think, of your life almost, is this ultimate ownership. Like, how important is it to just have ownership over everything?
I think it has brought me a sense of freedom. Because when you blame other people, you steal yourself, you rob yourself of the opportunity to do anything about the situation, you know? And so is it somebody else's fault? Maybe. Is it still your problem to deal with? Yes. And so, you know, is it my fault my voice is so low? I don't know. Do I still get to deal with it? Yes. I think I've just thought that, you know, is it my fault that my mother became an alcoholic and left me for days at a time? No. Is it my problem to deal with? Yes. I've just, like, seldom are the people who are the cause of our problems also the ones to fix them? It's us. And I just feel like a lot of time is wasted trying to figure out who we need to blame rather than just getting to the solution. And I don't know about you, but I would rather spend a lot more time solving problems than dwelling in them.
That's one of the most powerful things I've heard on ever for an interview. Like, I really love that. As a 10-year-old to accept that as well is mind-blowing. Thank you so much for today. The thing I usually sort of ask people, as a lot of people love to try and understand somebody's life, is like, what does a daily routine look like for you? And I know are you still doing the health and fitness and still working out every single day? I mean, yeah, how does that line up your day? How do you work a day? You're CEO of a huge company. Like, what does it look like?
You know, what's funny is my days never look the same, because some weeks I'm talking to every CEO of every portfolio company and they all have shit burning and they need to talk and they need to have conversations. Some weeks I'm doing an event and 3 podcasts and I'm doing a ton of content. And so it's filming almost every day. And then some weeks I'm just focused on the strategy and building our business and our holdco and maybe hiring and onboarding. You know, this week, for example, I'm onboarding a new CFO. That's the big focus. I'm also dealing with the, you know, second order consequences of having done a big book launch that we just did. Neither of those things are going to occur really ever again for years, right? And so I think that's actually what I love about what I do, is that it changes every day. The way I approach my days is I have things I do every day. I walk with Alex every day. We try to have a meal together every day. I work out every day. I, you know, send thank yous and appreciation notes to my team every day. I check my inboxes every day. I work on projects every day. When I do those things, changes based on everything else that's going on. And so I don't try to be rigid in terms of like, what do I do in the morning and at night and at this time and this time? I try to just say, like, I look at my calendar and say, like, where can I fit this in? And that is what works for me. You know, I think that when I've tried to be rigid in the past about how my routine looks and how my schedule looks, it ends up in me being much more stressed. But if I approach it with, how can I be flexible and still get everything done? I feel much more relieved at the end of the day.
I love that. But I have to follow up with one more. Is that a skill that you learn to be able to move between things? Because I struggle so, I have to be focused on one task and then to move to another feels so difficult for me.
I think it takes practice. So in the beginning, to go from a one-on-one with the team to a very serious talk with a portfolio CEO to doing content, basically what I see it is that it's the switching of hats. Because the truth is that how we behave in front of how you talk to me, how you talk to her, how you talk to your mom at home, whatever, different. You act a little bit differently. And I think that in the beginning, that's very fatiguing for people to be able to have the context of a situation and show up a little bit differently based on what's needed of you at the time. I just think most people then say, I need to be able to only do this thing because otherwise I'm not good at it. But I said, like, my job is to be able to do all these things. So what I need to get really good at is switching, knowing what hat I'm wearing, and that I don't have to feel like excited to do the next thing. I don't have to feel like making content. I don't have to feel like talking to the CEO, but I can behave in a way that gets me the outcome I want. And that has worked really well for me, is like just knowing that it's all just behavior. It's not how I feel. So even though I might not feel like switching between things, I still can't.